This is E.B. Cotenord, and you're listening to the Triple Existential Podcast.
I don't date writers. That's a rule in my personal life. No writers. I also don't do rules, so I end up dating a lot of writers. Boys who can turn a beautiful phrase do unholy things to my heart. Professionally, I knew I was safe. Clients who are writers are still clients, and I have rules about clients. I'm still averse to rules. I didn't exactly break any of my rules with the writer, but I came close enough and the damage couldn't be undone. It was permanent and it was deep. It changed my career. It changed the way my career affected my personal life. It changed my relationship with men, and it changed me. Maybe damage isn't the right word. It felt like damage. There was debris and shrapnel everywhere from the destruction of my old worldview. But there was also clarity. There was a new understanding of the lies that populate the truth and the truths that compose the foundations of the best lies. I came away with an understanding of the dismissive recklessness of love and the love of the dismissive recklessness and a better understanding of the motives for it all. Love in its purest forms can be cruel and uncaring. The writer taught me how to love a stranger and hate him deeply. But all of that came after. The first time the writer called, it was around dinner time in the middle of the week. He was a little drunk, couldn't talk straight, and wanted 2 hours of my time for my 1 hour rate. I told him no. He whined. He wanted to see me, but he didn't want to spend that much. I informed him that he had to make a decision. He either had to spend that much or he couldn't see me. Eventually, he was willing to settle on 90 minutes for my 90-minute rate. 50% more money than he wanted to spend for 30 minutes less time than he wanted. Drunk writers are not good at negotiating. I had a very romantic notion of the writer as a wealthy, tortured artist grappling with his alcoholism while he suffered through emotional bloodletting, his story seeping from his mind onto paper, holed up and hidden in hotels. He lived a double life, his public life of fiction and his life of fantasies, verbal and physical, his reality. My understanding of the writer as a living caricature may be a caricature I created myself. I looked him up to make sure he wasn't a cop or a murderer or like Facebook friends with my mom. I was not interested in running into anyone matching any of those descriptions. The writer was recently married. His wife was beautiful. They had some kids from previous marriages and 5 dogs together. I found his website and scrolled through the images of book covers with his name printed on them. He wrote mostly about sports history and statistics. It was boring and self-indulgent, so I still preferred my mental image of him as a world-worn and love-weary, cynical romantic, spinning beautiful phrases over cheap whiskey poured neat and opium-laced joints he bought off his landscapers. On another page, he had his CV and his rates listed for freelance copywriting services. I couldn't help but feel smug and sad when I realized how long he had worked to earn enough to pay for 90 minutes of my time. Well, I felt sad until I scrolled his Facebook and realized he was seeing me while his wife was out of town showing their horses and giving seminars on loving and faithful marriages to her life coaching clients. I considered how underqualified she was and wondered how much she knew and how much she didn't know because she didn't want to know. But that was really none of my business. One more tap of the page down key, and I saw photos of the new racquetball courts they were installing in their home. They had tennis courts in the yard, but they were not near enough to their 3,200 square foot guest house that was also in the yard. The guest house they really needed to host more parties in, because it felt like the only thing they used it for was painting and writing and as a home office. I couldn't figure out the math of this man's life. If he worked for a typical 8-hour day, he didn't make what I made in an hour. And I gave up and grabbed my leather-bound notebook with the address he gave me and headed out. It was summer and it was daylight, and these were not the ideal conditions for visiting the motel the writer was staying at. men whose net worth was clearly nothing more than their beer bellies and whatever their body hair was worth on the free market were displaying their goods over low-slung jeans while wandering past the dozen or so doors that made up that miserable roadside establishment. The writer was in room 6. I found it because he had the door propped open. I'm not sure if it was propped open to let me in, or because he wanted to make sure it didn't rust itself shut, trapping him inside. Someone, at some point, a few decades ago, had installed carpeting. That unskilled person was not given instruction or guidance or adult supervision. I can tell at one point they put carpet on the floor, since some of it was still there, but their artistic vision really shone in the way they alternated the carpet with vinyl wood-printed paneling on the walls. I was impressed with the monochromatic color scheme. The matte finish of the carpet contrasted with the sheen of the peeling plastic laminating the wood, and how even the sliding accordion door to the bathroom was the same shade of brown as everything in the room, except for the definitely hasn't always been yellow bedspread. I closed the door, latching it. If there was even a chance I was going to end up with tetanus from rug burns I got off the bathroom walls in this place, I was going to do it behind a locked door like a dignified professional. The writer was drunk and the room smelled like his landscaper had sold him joints he claimed were laced with opium, but were really just unused mulch from the Zen garden mixed with a bag of shake found under a rock somewhere near the writer's tennis courts. Empty tallboy cans surrounded a stack of bills.
I'm not going to be able to tip you. I hope that's okay.
He was genuinely sorry. I don't expect anything like that. I appreciate it, though. I could tell by looking at the stack that the 90 minutes of my money was all there. I set my bag down on the table and changed the subject, eagerly wrapping one arm over his shoulder and brushing yesterday's 5 o'clock shadow with my other hand. I stepped in and kissed him. You smell nice. I lied. He smelled awful. He had showered, but there are some miracles soap and water just cannot perform. He smiled.
I'm sorry, where are my manners? Would you like to come in and sit down?
He gestured towards the bed with a small, disarming chuckle. So what brings you to the Sunlight Motel this evening? I asked, enjoying the name of the motel since clearly Sunlight, the best disinfectant, had never visited this place. His casual wave took in the sickly decor and discarded cans.
You know, just hanging out.
Yeah, it seems like the kind of place you just hang out at.
Yeah, well, sometimes you just need to get away, a change of scenery.
Sure, absolutely. I imagine you come here all the time. It's really nice. I'm guessing you don't actually live here? Is this just your summer home? That was the moment I knew I had him. Unfortunately, it was also the moment he had me. There was no tension. There was none of the awkwardness of two people alone in a vaguely terrifying motel room. It felt like we knew each other. We had both sunk into our own comfort and let it take us. I felt like a date, like a real date. So, what do you do? I asked him. I like to pretend I haven't done a fair amount of research on them. Early on, like with the writer, I actually bothered to remember most of it. These days, once I've determined a client is not an immediate threat, and I've let someone know where to check for my body if I go missing, I have no real reason to remember much. Though I'll usually double-check my texts for a first name right before I knock on the door, just so I don't say the wrong name in bed. It's just impolite to praise someone whose tongue is halfway up your butthole and call them by the wrong name. But I knew the writer's name. And I knew his story and his life. He wanted to believe I didn't, so I let him believe what he needed to believe. I'm a writer, he bragged with just the right amount of self-deprecation. Oh, you are? What do you write? I asked him to draw him out.
I've written a few books. I'm working on something new now, but I'm a copywriter. What do you do?
Oh, I'm a hooker.
Ha ha ha, no you're not. You're a very nice...
I shifted on the definitely hadn't always been yellow bedspread.
Oh,
Reality and all its discomforts settled in on the bed between us for one fleeting second. Right, I smile at him teasingly. I was starting to wonder why you thought I was here.
Heyo, everybody. This is Charlie.
And I'm Evie.
And this is the Triple Existential Podcast.
With Evie.
Mostly with Evie. Why don't you say it?
Okay. Hi, everybody. This is the Triple Existential Podcast. I'm your host, Evie.
And this is the sidekick and definitely not trying to take over the podcast, Charlie. But secretly trying to take it over.
It's okay.
Yeah.
It's your first step in world domination.
Oh, I have no interest.
First podcast, second, I don't know, maybe there's like 2 to 3 steps in between and then like world domination.
Is this like first step underpants?
It's very much like that.
Yeah, okay.
Except for like instead of like step 2? I'm actually adding like 2 to 3 steps because like let's be real, you're not getting from this podcast to world domination in like one step.
Okay, can you imagine like me being in charge of the entire world? I think it'd be a lot of me being like, I don't know if I'm good enough to be world dictator. Also, everyone eat a goddamn vegetable. Yeah. Sit down, eat your vegetables.
Yeah. Where
are your shoes?
Yeah.
Benjamin Netanyahu, where are your shoes?
That is not the kind of language that we use to people that we like. It would be really tragic.
Yeah.
Please use appropriate UN language, people.
Yeah. I statements. It's like if a kindergarten teacher was in charge of everything. A kindergarten teacher that would really prefer to be taking a nap right now, thanks.
Yeah.
All right. So, on the subject of what we actually should be talking about, you know, we were talking about roles and personas and this podcast and your work. And I really wanted to expand on the fact that the writer and you had this moment where reality and the fantasy blended together so much that for a moment everyone kind of forgot which role they were supposed to be playing. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, so, you know, I have a very different relationship with my clients than I do with, like, people in my real life. And part of that is my professional responsibility to stay out of one another's lives. Like, you're not welcome in my life, I'm not welcome in your life. No matter how much we like each other as people, you know, that is firm boundary. Like, we do not, you know, you're not both like in Evie's life and in like my real life persona's life. Like, you can be in one or the other. And I'm very, very good at compartmentalizing that. You know, I wrote this much earlier on, and this relationship with this man happened very early on, relatively early on in my career. I understood that boundary, but it was a lot harder to navigate, and I feel like now I'm much better at it. But, like, you know, I say in the piece, like, I met him, and, like, there was just this connection. Like, we were two people who, like, would have been friends for 20 years had we met 20 years ago in the right time and place. You know, we just, like, we met, we clicked, we had this, like, amazing rapport, and, like, our senses of humor were really compatible and, like, dry, and, like, you know, we could just, like, you know, there was this, like, this rhythm of, like, the way we talked and the way we just, like, instantly connected. And I really liked that. Because, I mean, that's what we all like about being around people. Like, when you find somebody that you connect with really well, but, like, there was also a part of me that kind of resented that. Like, there was an animosity for that because he's not somebody that I would actually have in my real life, and I'm not somebody who he would have in his real life. And that was difficult.
Yeah, can you talk more about, I mean, this, the reality of, you know, the idea of, you know, of becoming EB, or the fact that you are EB there, like, because I think that's something that we've talked about, you know, a bit with this podcast and wanted to cover with this piece specifically, is the idea that, yeah, I mean, you're EB, but Evie's not you. I mean, I'm not putting that as elegantly as I could.
Yeah, like, I am Evie. Evie, like, exists inside of my body, but, like, when I leave, you know, when the timer goes off and, you know, it's time for me to leave, like, I'm no longer Evie. I'm no real world me. But that's part of what the money is for, is to maintain that professional, personal boundary. And, you know, and you know, the money is there to, you know, compensate me, you know, to pay me to make sure that even if for him, you know, the fantasy gets blurred with reality, like, it's my responsibility as a professional to make sure that the fantasy stays within the walls of the rooms that we have the fantasies in. And then when we walk out, I walk out of the room and I'm no longer EB. He walks out of the room and he's still who he is. And it's my responsibility to make sure that I protect him and myself. You know, I don't think that EB is a far stretch from, like, real world me at all. But, you know, it's definitely, you know, I think we talked about this before. It's kind of like the Instagram version of me. It's like, this part's bigger, this part's smaller, this part's a little bit blurry. Like, mm-hmm. you know, like, all the imperfections and, you know, those things I try to kind of, you know, filter out. And you're getting the real me, but, like, photoshopped.
For sure.
You know,
for sure.
That's...
Yeah, but I'm not every single aspect of myself in a business meeting or, like, in an interview or, you know, I mean, we're all facets of ourselves in different places. Or, you know, my boss isn't, you know, or my clients aren't paying for me to be all of myself. I mean, I don't think that's, like, a foreign concept to most people. It's like, does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, yeah. You know, professional relationships are like that. You know, I think that there is a difference in this industry because we are walking that line where, like, we do have these very personal and very intimate and very vulnerable, trusting relationships that are different from other professional relationships. Mm-hmm. And, like, if they feel, you know, we've talked about it being transactional, mm-hmm. but if it feels transactional, like, I don't feel like I've done my job. Some people are actually looking for something that feels like the transaction because they don't want the, like, part of what they're paying for is the physical experience. They don't want emotional connection. Mm-hmm. They don't want an intellectual connection. And they don't want to see somebody that they think of in that way. Mm-hmm. And that is perfectly acceptable. Like, if you don't want or need, or it's not good for you, or you just, like, kind of are like, that's gross, I would never want to, like, actually have a conversation with a stranger that I just, like, fuck, like, whatever, like, that's fine. You know, I think that most people do have, you know, kind of an emotional need for that connection. And, you know, to be, like, naked with another person does require a level of vulnerability and a level of trust that is very unique to this particular professional arrangement. And, you know, it's my job to give them the very best version of me and the version of me that they're hoping to meet. You know, I can't pull, like, the real me out of EB mm-hmm. and, like, just have, like, EB, like, live as, like, you know, whatever, like, this, like, she just, like, inhabits this, like, carcass puppet of me that, you know, mm-hmm. is...
Well, EB needs you to exist.
Yeah, I mean, yeah I have to, yeah. I mean, EB can't exist without me because, yeah. You know, everything is, you know, imbued with me as it goes through me. But, you know, but that isn't me. Mm-hmm. Like, it isn't the real life version of me. And I think that's easy to forget sometimes.
Well, I think that it's also, what I hear is that it's also, like, something that really needs to be kept in the forefront of people's minds is that your professional persona is a kind of authenticity. It is real. It's mm-hmm. it's genuine, at least, right? But at the same time, it's contingent. You know, I mean, it's like, it seems to me like the problem with the writer is that you are, you know, in this dynamic, right? If you genuinely have an interest in someone or you genuinely like them, you're liking who they are, right? And they're liking Evie. You know, so the, I mean, I'm wondering if that's like a fair, like, so there's this like thing where it's like, and you're like under a lot of pressure to continuously, like you were saying, you leave the room, Evie ceases to exist. They leave the room, they get to still be who they are.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, one thing that I do, you know, and whatever happens in your real world life and whatever happens in my real world life, you know, it's kind of inconsequential once we're in the room. But I feel like there is a profound honesty in this relationship that I have with my clients. Like, I feel like I'm getting a more genuine version of the people that I meet than if I met them in another capacity. You know, you don't need to protect yourself when you're with me. Like, you don't have to worry about being judged, and you don't have to worry about, you know, what if I ask for this thing and it fucks everything up? Like, you're really free to be your complete self. And, you know, I'm somebody who is willing to be your secret and keep your secrets.
So, same great time.
Yeah, and, you know, go join the Patreon.
Yeah, definitely check us out on Patreon, and we have a lot of different levels for people to interact with, yeah. And we're beefing up our archives as we speak with badass outtakes, and there's cool print downloads available for members.
Yeah, all my essays that I'm reading, you know, we're putting the, you know, they're downloadable, printable versions.
Nicely designed
yeah. By Charlie.
The magical elf, magical house elf. And you're running a promotional special on your OnlyFans?
That's right. If you, when this podcast is released, I will tweet that it's up and running and you can go download it. And if you comment on, it should be my pinned tweet, about what you liked about this week's episode. I pick one person from those comments and I give them a free week of my OnlyFans.
Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. And join me, Ebi Cote-Nord, next week for another episode of the Triple Existential Podcast.